Some of the news headlines today, bitter exchanges between Israel and Palestinians as Israel pushes ahead with plans for two new Jewish settlements around Jerusalem. Also in the region, rival demonstrations in Egypt over that country's new proposed constitution. The escalating conflict in Syria, now spilling over into neighboring Lebanon. How does all of this affect Hamas, the militant Palestinian group that provoked a short war with Israel last month in Gaza and has an uneasy relationship with a more moderate Palestinian group, Fatah, in the West Bank? At the center of Hamas policy is the elimination of Israel. Fatah remains secular and has agreed to recognize Israel. But what else is going on? Mideast expert Thanasi Kambana says Hamas has another problem within its own leadership. Thanasi is a fellow at the Century Foundation. He joins us on the line. Thanasi, welcome as always.
Always great to be with you, Robin.
And you say something has changed, that Hamas has been strengthened by conflict with Israel, and the fact that the UN granted Palestinians a state-like status. So on the one hand, you say it's kind of game on again, that Hamas is strengthened.
Yeah, this is, without overstating what's happened in the last month, I think we can begin to write the epitaph on the 20 years that began with the Oslo Accords, and we can say a new phase has begun. The new phase, there's a couple of things that really make this different, and the first one is that Hamas is now the dominant representative of the Palestinians. It doesn't control Palestinian politics yet. It is not the only player, obviously, as we saw in the UN last week. There's still a Palestinian Authority controlled by Fatah. But Hamas is the ascendant faction, and Hamas is the one that has found itself getting results from Israel, and it's gotten results through fighting wars and doing well enough to exact concessions.
But you also say that Hamas is also weakened, first of all, because Israel assassinated many of the Hamas leaders in Gaza in that conflict, but also because Hamas actually has two sets of leaders. You remind us, one that's elected to power in Gaza, but another in exile. How does this somehow undermine the strengths that you've just listed?
Well, so what we've got here is we've got a movement that has for 20 years amassed power, often by playing the spoiler to peace negotiations, and often by simply winning, either provoking conflict or winning internal conflict with its other rivals. In some ways, that's the easy part. So now Hamas has gotten to a point where it controls Gaza, and it looks poised to eventually take over full Palestinian national leadership. And the question is, okay, you guys, you're in charge. You've been in charge of Gaza now for 5 years. What do you want to do next? What do you want, for example, if you do end up having the chance to make a long-term agreement with Israel? Where would the borders be? What would you do with refugees? How would you handle these divisive questions that have been so hard for Fatah in charge? And, of course, they don't have answers for these, partly because they like being the outsiders and the spoilers, and partly because of this rift you alluded to between their slightly more pragmatic exiled leadership and their significantly more militant leadership inside of Gaza, which have been at loggerheads somewhat behind the scenes, but that's going to break in the open the more power they have to fight over.
When you say slightly more pragmatic leadership outside of Gaza, what do you mean by slightly more pragmatic? I mean, are they accepting? Are they saying, you know, we have to at least accept the existence of Israel? What do you mean by pragmatic?
Well, I mean, we have to be careful with these words, because you say pragmatic, and one gets the impression of, say, a peaceful professor, and that's not what we're talking about. The exiled leadership has spoken about a long-term truce in the line of like 100 years. They've talked about the borders of a Palestinian state. So by implication, they've acknowledged that there's a Jewish state next door. They have not actually spoken of a Jewish state that they would recognize and accept. They have not spoken of retreating from the core Hamas position that there shouldn't be a Jewish state in Israel. So when we say more pragmatic, we mean they sound receptive to something like a two-state solution, but it's not with the kinds of open assurances and recognition that would make the Jewish state actually feel safe and secure.
Yeah, but how is, you know, there has been this division in the leadership. What's happening now to make it perhaps even more dangerous for Hamas leaders sticking to their guns, literally, in Gaza? And I'm wondering how the Arab Spring plays into this. On the one hand, you have Egypt, which, of course, in the past under Mubarak did not at all embrace Hamas. but did so in this conflict under the Muslim Brotherhood leadership. But, you know, you also say that the fact that there might be ascendant Islamists in a country like Egypt doesn't necessarily mean that Hamas's regional standing is also rising. How does it affect? What's going on?
Well, so yeah, I mean, it's a crazy soup. But the first thing that's clear is Islamists around the region are empowered and ascendant. That doesn't mean that they're going to be a unified front. We saw this very clear after the latest war between Gaza and Israel. Egypt came in on the side of Hamas in the sense that they spoke up more for Hamas in negotiations and they weren't tilted towards the other side. At the end of the day, however, Egypt has its own interests there, and its own interests are keeping quiet on that border. They don't want jihadists coming over into their own territory, and they don't want Hamas fighting wars. So at the end of the day, Hamas wants a kind of level of support from Egypt that Egypt's not going to give it, whether Egypt is run by a total Islamist or by a total secular guy who hates them. However, looking more long term, I think what we do see is a region that is going to be increasingly willing to either confront Israel politically or to back Hamas when Hamas does so, and that is going to change the dynamics in a serious way.
It sounds as if you're saying, Thanasi, if I got this right, the ascension of Islamists who are more moderate than Hamas sort of reduces them because they're more extreme somehow.
I wouldn't put it that way. I mean, I think what we're going to see is we're going to see Hamas in charge of Palestinian politics. From 10 years from now, they're not going to be one of two equal factions. They're going to be the dominant faction, and there's going to be an Arab political sphere. We're going to see in Syria, in Egypt, maybe in Jordan as well, Islamist political parties in charge, and they might be just as repressive and undemocratic, by the way, as the regimes that they've supplanted. But that landscape is going to be different in a lot of ways. Depending on your perspective, an unfortunate implication of it is that the idea of resistance as the path to solving the Israel-Palestine conflict is going to take momentum. So Hamas's recipe, which is attack to get concessions, is going to become the preferred course.
Well, and here's just one example of the complication. Hamas supports the opposition in Syria, but Syria's biggest supporter is Iran. Iran had been arming and giving money to Hamas. So what happens now? Hamas supporting the opposition. Thanasi Kambanis, a fellow at the Century Foundation, just giving us a peek at some of the complicated threads in the Middle East. We'll link you to his article in Foreign Affairs at HereNow.org. Thanasi, thanks as always.
Always a pleasure.
Back in a minute. Here Now.